And she had a fortnight in Wales, of all places. My goodness me, you're now working for the Welsh Tourist Board. You enjoyed yourself.
I've asked a lot of people this. Have you been to Wales? You know, it's not the first place you think about going or whatever. And it was on my bucket list and I thought, I want to go and see what Wales is like. And honestly, it was unreal. It is the most beautiful country with the most beautiful people. Stunning, absolutely stunning scenery. And great food and a beautiful simplicity about it. And lots of history. I did not know this. I was just talking to Robert about it. People actually speak Welsh. I speak for Irish. I have done Irish. I have studied Gaelic. Okay, I've gone to the Gael talk. I've done that. But this is a live language, you know, all over the place. I really didn't realise that. And beautiful poets, meeting people in pubs and they start to recite poetry to you. Just really, really beautiful experience. Highly recommend it.
There's the thumbs up for Wales.
Absolutely.
I've been through Wales very briefly, just on the edges of it, going to places in England. But I haven't had a proper visit to Wales. I have to put my hand up and say maybe I should do what you've just done and experience that beautiful language and the fabulous accent and, needless to say, the breathtaking scenery. And do they have plenty of sheep? Because there's always, you always think of...
So many sheep.
Yeah.
So many sheep. What we did was we just did Airbnb and we stayed in remote Airbnbs, and you really got a sense of the expanse of the country, the sparseness of population. There's plenty of room, plenty of space, and just wild horses on the, unreal.
Romantic setting.
If you were into that kind of thing, if that's what you want, not for me, but I would be open to it if it was a situation that arose.
This is Dirty McGuire from DirtyMcGuire.com, sponsored by the Welsh Tourist Board here on U105. Right, what were we talking about today?
So, what you asked me earlier on what we were going to be talking about, and I said fear, but we're not actually talking about fear. What we're actually talking about is how to get what you want. How do you go about getting what you want, and what is stopping you from getting what you want, you know? So it's all about feel the fear. Have you ever heard this, feel the fear and do it anyway?
Feel the fear. I suppose we've all been at that threshold, haven't we, at some point.
Feel the fear and do it anyway. And my question for you is, when was the last time you felt the fear and did it anyway? When did you feel the fear and just go for it anyway?
Let me think. If I can rewind here. 31st of March, 1987. 25 past 9 in the morning.
Is the last time that you ever... You see, if you... I felt
fear at that moment. 9:25, 31st of March was Tuesday morning.
Yes.
On the 31st of March, 1987... And it was the fear, I really felt the fear at 9:24. But at 9:25, I remember thinking, my heart is now coming out through my shirt, because my shirt was moving with the of my heartbeat.
Yes.
And I had 4 minutes of live television to do, and I'd never done anything before. So back at 25 past nine in 1987, they used to switch on the TV. TV started at 9:30. So there was a test card up until 25 past nine. And then at 9:30, what was known as children's schools programmes. Schools programmes began and they came from UTV for an hour. So what we did at 25 past nine, and what Pamela Ballantyne had already been doing for the best part of a decade, she was doing that. Julian Simmons would have been doing it. At 25 past nine, they give you a reminder of programmes you could watch that evening on UTV. So you had to put together 4 minutes of little clips and introduce them and talk about them. And, you know, I remember doing the 11 plus and watching Pamela on television, thinking, when I grow up, I'd love to do what she does.
I
eventually followed in her golden shoes, and there I was sitting with my heart beating as I broadcast on TV for the first time as a boy of 23. I just I can go back to that when you want to describe fear, because there was Elnett hairspray, isn't that what you call it? It's like in a gold tube. The last thing I noticed before I went on the screen was my hair was sticking up, and there was a mirror just off to the left of the camera, and I jumped up and I sprayed some of that Elnett and pushed my hair down. Every time I smell that spray,
really?
I call that the smell of fear.
So that is so rich in content, because the first thing I want to say that is how the mind works. You see, the mind associates, it's nothing to do with the hairspray, but it's your connection in your mind with fear. And when you know this, and if you are a person who is afraid a lot, you can change your association. When you change your association with what you believe fear is, then you can actually really, really, you know, get what you want. This is how people get what they want. You know, there's no one who isn't afraid. But when you understand how the mind works, then you can overcome the fear, override that fear. So that's the first thing, that's so interesting. And, it's the law of association. And when you can break the association, you can get what you want. The second thing is, what was good about it? So that's, you were absolutely bricking it at that point. You were so terrified at that point. But then, how good did it feel when you had done it?
Well, that was the reward.
Yeah.
Because when it came out the other side of it, and we linked together the four clips and then introduced the school's programs, I remember getting up off the seat that I'd been sitting in, and the school's programs are now going out, and just double checking that I still wasn't on the screen, and walking 1 meter away from the camera and going, just like as if I was letting out some sort of painful growl.
Yes, because you were actually at that point, you were in fight or flight. Your body was in such stress. But when you know that, then you can actually override it. So, like I was thinking about, what was it for me? The last time there's a thing called a box jump in the gym. I go to CrossFit, and we do a thing called box jump, and I would watch everybody else doing it. And I wanted to do it so much. The desire to do it, same as you, the desire to be on the TV was greater than the fear. So my desire was huge, but at that point, my fear was bigger. And I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. But I wanted to do it. So because I had the desire to do it, I actually got a joiner to make a box, a smaller one, for me at home. And I practiced standing on the stairs. If you can imagine my stairs, and I'm standing on the stairs and I'm jumping onto the box. I thought, I'll do that first. And then I practiced jumping from the ground up onto the lower box. And I just kept practicing that over and over and over again. I made the desire to do it bigger than the fear. And I imagined it in my head that it was already done. That's the key to it. And then I practiced on the smaller box, bite-sized chunks. That's how you do it. And then I went to the gym one day, and there was the box. And I just thought, here we go. And I just did it. And it's so beautiful, because a friend of mine was actually videoing, had their phone, and they caught it. And they actually put it on slow motion. And I jumped up on the box. And then later on, I actually jumped up on the bigger box. So fear can show up anywhere, okay? Fear of failure, fear of rejection, fear of the unknown. Just people can be paralyzed by fear, you know. So there are different examples of what I have here. You know, the entrepreneur who hesitates due to the fear of financial loss, or the aspiring writer. You know, the aspiring comedian. I know that G. Harbour desires to be a comedian, Frank.
Right. Listen, this is true. You've hit the nail on the head here.
I know.
I would love to be able to go out in the Ulster Hall in front of 1,000 people and entertain them for an hour telling my stories. And
absolutely, you can do that, Frank.
I have such admiration for people who go out at comedy festivals and open mic nights and who tell stories or do gags. And some of them are simply not funny at all, but they still do it. And I applaud them, I admire them, and I respect them. And I actually think my stories are funny, but I haven't the courage to tell them.
So this is how you can over... I think you would be brilliant. I do actually think you're a great raconteur. I do think you tell a very good story. And you could actually do that, but what is stopping you from doing that? What is stopping you from doing that?
Maybe it's the lack of the desire. Maybe I'd like to do it, but I think if you really want to do something, fear won't stop you. But inherent in that is a fear that people mightn't laugh.
Yes.
They might just look up at me and say, who is that?
Yeah.
Egypt. Yeah, exactly. How did that agent get on the stage?
So this is what I want you to, I want you to even entertain that fact that you imagine if you actually did do that and how good you would, if you take the same situation as you had with the television and after it you felt so good, okay, you went over and, you know, felt like being sick or whatever, but you did it and look at the trajectory of your life after that, because you had the courage to do that scary thing. So what if you could have the courage to do the scary thing now in your lifetime? Why not do it just for the crack? Just do it for the fun, you know? And, you know, you don't need to start off in a big hall. You could start off in a pub.
You see, I had this conversation with David Hull. David Hull, who is obviously very highly respected here as a promoter and a manager and an organiser of events from David Hull Entertainments. And I was sitting beside him at an event one night and I said, David, you know, would there be a demand for someone like myself?
An agent.
Being an agent is right. Being up on stage, you know, painting a picture of the last 30 years or so.
I think it would be brilliant.
Telling my stories. And David said, there probably would be, but the bookings would come from, he said, Mother's Institutes and Orange Halls, and you would get a bunch of flowers and 25 quid. You know, and that was, like, he was seeing it correctly through the eyes of, you're not going to make any money. People might,
you don't do everything people for money, Frank.
Yeah, but this is the important thing. People might like to hear your stories, but they're not going to pay you.
Well, I would challenge him on that. I would actually, and there are two things in there.
He's an impresario of entertainment.
Well, I believe, number one, that not everything is about money, and I
want paid for it. Let's start from baseline.
That's where we have to figure that out. We have to sort that out. Imagine if you didn't get paid. I mean, and you actually did it. What would the payment be at the end of it? How would you feel? It's not the money that's important, Frank. It's the feeling that the money gives you. So imagine you did it. How would you feel at the end of it once you had done that?
Yeah, I probably feel satisfied if everyone happened to be applauding and laughing and saying, well, wasn't he really good? And maybe the seeds would be sown then. You've got to see Mitchell. He's on tomorrow
there
night at the theatre in the middle.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
That's how it works. You start off and you leave an impression of more. You do it for free.
But what about if I left them wanting less?
Well, let that go. That's their problem.
You see your man, he was on the stage all night, worked for nothing, he wasn't worth tuppence.
That's just the fear, Frank. So there are steps that you can take, okay, whether it's fear of failure of rejection, on the unknown fear, three steps. Step one, identify your fear, okay? The first step is conquering it. So if you actually look at the fear and think, I am actually scared of this, I'm actually scared to do it, take a moment to identify it and acknowledge exactly what you're afraid of. Are you actually afraid of being rejected? Is that what you're afraid of, Frank? What are you afraid of?
Possibly that's what it is, that goes with rejection, the audience not laughing.
So you're afraid of the audience not laughing?
Or the audience starting to leave. You know, God, he's boring.
So in your mind, if you actually went to the worst of it and they'd start to leave, what would happen after that?
I'd keep on going.
You see? You would keep on going.
I would bore them the whole way out the door.
You see? So you don't really care. If people start to walk out, you don't actually care. So it's more about you than about them. So that's the first step. So the second step is, challenge your beliefs. Once you've identified your fears, question the beliefs underlying them. Ask yourself, are they serving me? Is this fear of you know, people not laughing? Is it serving you, or is it actually holding you back? I honestly, Frank, and, you know, I really think you're brilliant the way you tell stories. I love it. It's one of the characteristics about you that I really, really enjoy. Tell a good story.
Yeah, I was just thinking maybe we could start small, where I could use your box. We could do it outside your house to people going past.
I'll hire it to you. I'll hire it to you.
Exactly. Cost you. Right, far away. What's
so the third one is then take courageous action, okay? Courage is, now listen to this, courage is not the absence of fear, but the willingness to act despite it. Okay, take small, deliberate steps towards facing your fear. Start on the box.
Yeah.
Start with manageable challenges. I'm sure every comedian will tell you the same. They stood looking in the mirror and telling the story in rehearsal. I've done it when I was preparing to do talks, or, you know, I do corporate stuff and all of that. Where did I start? I recorded it on my phone. I went over and over and over again. You know that. You've done that kind of thing. So remember, each step forward, no matter how small, brings you closer to freedom from fear and closer to your full potential. Do not die with your music still in you, Frank. Do not die with your stories still in you. Okay, so I want to wind up with this. I don't know if you've heard this before. It's very powerful. It's one page. I'm going to read it. It's about 10 lines. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us most. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, Frank, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God, life, source, whatever you want to call it, that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others.
Thank you, Reverend Mother.
The Gospel According to Deirdre. I'll bring that box next week.
That was very enlightening. Thank you very much. And I will hire your box and maybe we'll have a go at it. I always remember Michael McIntyre. Michael McIntyre still tells the story, but then he's massively successful.
And very funny.
And, you know, he's playing gigs for $500,000 a night. And he said when he started out, he was doing a gig and there was only one person in the audience.
Yeah.
And the guy in the audience insisted on him doing the gig. And he did it for the one guy. And he says, the most annoying thing about it was buy one, get one free. And your man couldn't even get someone to go with him. So there's always hope
for
us.
That's where you learn, Frank. You learn in those moments, not when everything's running well. When the thing wasn't going well this morning, I was trying to get my printer to work and it wasn't working. You know, the computer wasn't working, things weren't working. It's in those moments where you stay calm, where you honour yourself, that's where you learn. So when you have your audience of one and then it goes to 1 million, you thank me, Frank.
Deirdre, you'll be the manager. Thank you, thank you. Who needs David Hull? Right, this is the U105 phone-in. U105.